I raise my eyebrows at him. Don't you have to work?
I'm the manager. I'm entitled to an afternoon off for something important. I'll drive you there.
You don't have to.
I'm driving, he says more firmly this time. You probably barely slept the last few nights. I wouldn't even trust you behind the wheel. Let me drive.
I start to protest again, but I don't know why I'm fighting him on this. I'm exhausted. I'm scared I really might fall asleep at the wheel. I'd love to take a nap, but I'll be tossing and turning until I get to the bottom of this. When we pull up in front of my house, there are a handful of reporters crowded on my front lawn. My stomach clenches at the sight of them. Videos of my arrest have gotten all over the news. Detective Santoro could not have picked a worse moment to arrest me, or a better moment, depending on how you look at it. I can't deal with this, I mutter. Seth glances up at the rearview mirror.
Don't worry. I'll take care of it.
He gets out of the car, and I watch in the side mirror as he speaks to the reporters. I don't know what he says to them, but they all take off. I'm almost ridiculously grateful to him. When I get into my house, I just stand in the living room for a moment, drinking in the quiet. In addition to the flickering lights and freezing cold, the holding cells were always noisy. There was a woman in the cell next to mine who seemed to be going through some sort of drug or alcohol withdrawal, and she was screaming about seeing bugs the entire night last night. I never realized how wonderful it is to have complete silence. Seth hovers in the doorway.
I can wait in the car, if you want.
No, it's fine. I'm going to hit the shower and then we'll go.
You got it.
When I get up to my bedroom, my phone starts ringing. It occurs to me that I never even let my parents know I'd gotten out of jail. But I think I'll wait on that. I don't want to deal with them right now. If it's my mother calling, I'll let it go to voicemail. But it's not my mother. It's Caleb. I stare down at his name flashing on the screen. Caleb McCullough. A week ago, I'd been thinking to myself that he might be the one. Now I don't know what to think. He definitely hasn't been completely honest with me. I wonder what he's got to say. I swipe to take the call.
Hello?
Nat, hey, I heard you got out on bail.
Word travels fast.
I sit down gingerly on the edge of my bed, gripping the phone. Yeah, my parents helped me out with the bail money. The lie rolls off my tongue.
That's great.
He sounds normal. Concerned, but not too concerned. Just the right amount of concerned. This man may be a cold-blooded killer. How are you feeling?
Are you okay?
How does he think I'm feeling? I just spent 3 days in jail. But I bite my tongue. I'm not going to snap at him. I don't want him to know what I know. Just tired, that's all.
Did you get my message about the motel?
Oh, yeah.
I drove over there, he says. There was a guy at the desk, and I asked him if he noticed anyone suspicious. I showed him that photo of Dawn from the papers.
And?
Nothing. He didn't know what I was talking about.
I see. I cough. Well, thanks for going down there.
No problem. This is all so awful what you're going through.
100 thoughts are running through my head. I want to ask Caleb if he knew Dawn before working at Vixt. I want to ask him why he went to the police about me. I want to ask him if he was the one who planted that hair and blood in the trunk of my car. I want to ask him if he ever cared about me, or if the whole thing was just an act.
Can I do anything for you?
He asks. I just want to be alone for a while, I say.
Of course. Call me later.
Does he want me to call him because he's concerned about me, or because he wants a window into what I'm thinking? Sure. What is Caleb's game? I know that he knows Dawn, but that's all I know for sure. He doesn't seem like he could possibly be a murderer. I can't wrap my head around it. There's something at that motel he doesn't want me to know about. I'm sure of it now. I'm going to find out what it is. Chapter 56. An hour later, I'm freshly showered, changed into jeans and a sweatshirt, and feeling like an entirely new person. I feel so good. I hate the idea of getting into the car and taking a long road trip, but it won't be so bad. Seth will be driving and I have to get to the bottom of this. Somebody from that motel was calling me over and over, and I need to know why. Seth stands up when I come down to the living room.
Ready to go?
Yes, definitely.
You feeling okay?
I rub my eyes. Just a little tired. I'll be fine.
Maybe you should take a few Colahealth capsules.
Then we both laugh. We get back on the road, but I still haven't eaten much since the awful breakfast they served me in jail. We stop off at a fast food drive-thru, and I order food I would never ordinarily indulge in. But I'm starving. All I want is a big, greasy fast food burger. Seth laughs when I demolish about half the burger in 3 bites. I remember when we were hooking up last year, we ended up eating a lot of fast food in the car. After all, we could hardly go to a restaurant. Sitting here in the car with Seth, stuffing fast food fries in my mouth, gives me a sense of deja vu. How were things going with Melinda? I ask.
Awful. This may come as a shock, but getting divorced sucks.
I'm sorry.
Don't be.
I squirm in the leather seat. I feel responsible.
You're not,
he says flatly.
Yeah, right. Look, I'm not going to say that what happened between you and me didn't make the whole thing a lot more contentious. But it was going to happen either way. We didn't even like each other anymore. You know, Melinda and I haven't had sex in over 3 years.
He said something like that when we were together, but I always thought he was exaggerating. I don't think so anymore.
It's not your fault,
he says.
Or, if it was, it was only because you reminded me that I was actually capable of being happy.
I don't know if he's saying that to let me off the hook or if he means it, but right now, I'll take it. I already feel bad enough about myself. I don't need to add homewrecker to the list of horrible things I've done in my life. Seth turns on the radio while we drive. He's really into classic rock, which is not my favorite, but I don't care much right now. I remember when I told Caleb my favorite singer was Celine Dion. His face lit up. Celine Dion is my favorite, too. Now I wonder if he was making that up, as another way to get close to me. What man's favorite singer is Celine Dion? It's an almost 90-minute drive to get to the motel. It's a large place, 2 stories sprawled out over a large lot, with dozens of rooms that open directly to the outside. And it's in the middle of nowhere. It's a perfect place to hide out. A neon sign denotes the main office for the motel. Seth parks right outside, and we sit in the car for a moment.
You ready?
He asks. I nod wordlessly. There are butterflies in my stomach. I'm terrified of what Caleb doesn't want me to know about this place. What has he done? Is my boyfriend a cold-blooded killer? Is Dawn lying dead in one of these hotel rooms, sprawled out on a plastic-covered mattress? We march to the front door, which is hanging on its hinges. This motel is a dive. A man is sitting behind the counter, his eyelids sagging shut, his brown hair long and scraggly. This entire lobby looks like it hasn't been cleaned in a decade. If I sat on the sofa in the room, a big puff of dust would come out of it.
Help you? The clerk asks lazily.
Yes, thank you. I dig my phone out of my purse and bring up a picture I've got of Caleb. Well, it's Caleb and me. It's a selfie I took of the two of us back when I thought he might be the one. I held it up for the man. Have you seen this man? The clerk barely glances at the photo.
I don't know. We get a lot of people coming in and out.
Seth digs out his wallet from his back pocket. He pulls out a couple of bills and slides them across the table.
Do you think you could look again for us?
The man looks down at the cash on the table. He scoops up the bills and tucks them into his front pocket. Then he leans in to take a better look at my phone.
Oh, yeah, he says. Now I recognize him. He was here on Saturday.
My heart sinks. That doesn't help me at all. Caleb already told me he drove here on Saturday, so this only proves that he was telling the truth.
Did you talk to him?
Seth asks the guy. He nods.
Yeah, he was checking out.
I suck in a breath. Checking out?
That's right. He got a room, I think on Monday night, and he came in here to check out.
Seth and I exchange looks. There it is. Solid evidence that Caleb is full of it. My boyfriend has been lying to me all week. Except why?
Was he with anyone? Seth asks.
The clerk hesitates.
I'm pretty sure he had a woman staying with him in the room, but I'm not absolutely sure. I try not to pay too much attention, you know, unless I hear screaming or gunshots. I look the other way.
A woman? On a whim, I type the name Dawn Schiff into my search engine.
It brings up that awful idea of Dawn. I hold up the image. Was this the woman who was staying with him?
It's possible. She had more hair than that, but it could have been a wig. And no glasses. She was skinny as a rail like this woman, though.
Holy crap. Is it possible Dawn is still alive? Did she look like she was being held hostage? I ask. The clerk lifts a shoulder.
Didn't seem like it. She wasn't tied up or anything. But like I said, I try not to pay too much attention.
We thank the clerk and get out of the motel. Caleb was definitely here, but it's obvious he's long gone. But it doesn't matter. Caleb isn't planning to disappear like Dawn did. He'll show up at work sometime this week, pretending everything is fine. That's when I'll confront him with what I know.
That asshole, Seth mutters as we get back into the car. What the hell is he up to?
I have no idea.
Look what he's putting you through.
He hits the steering wheel with his palm.
And for what? Why is he doing this?
I wish I knew.
I'm sorry I didn't believe you at first.
The sun has dropped in the sky, and his eyes look shiny in the shadows.
I should have never doubted you.
I know you wouldn't steal. I don't blame you.
When I get my hands on Caleb, I'm going to punch him in the nose.
For some reason, his words make me laugh, and he grins back at me. It's the first time I've laughed in what feels like forever, but it's beginning to feel like there's a small chance this could all work out. Caleb is the key to everything, and he has no idea what I know. We start on the drive back to Dorchester. As buzzed as I am from the events of the day, the motion of the car eventually lulls me to sleep. Seth gets how tired I am, and he shuts off the music and drives in silence. He doesn't even hit his horn, which is unusual behavior for him because he's a typical Boston driver who loves to lean on his horn. Sitting in the passenger seat of his car, this is somehow the best sleep I've gotten in a week. It's only interrupted by Seth's hand on my arm, shaking me awake.
Natalie, he says. There is an urgency in his voice that makes my eyes shoot open.
What?
Look.
I blink a few times and rub my eyes. The sun has gone down completely now, but I can tell we're back in my neighborhood. On my block. In fact, my house is only a stone's throw away from the car. Seth is pointing at the house. It's very dark out, so I have to squint to see what he's talking about. That's when I notice there's a man in front of my house, sitting on the front steps. And when he sees our car, he rises to his feet. Oh my God. It's Caleb. Chapter 57.
Stay in the car, Seth says. Lock the doors.
He means well. Caleb isn't who we thought he was, and he's certainly been lying to me. But at the same time, I don't think he's dangerous. In my heart, I don't believe he killed Dawn. I don't think he's capable of it. Even with all the lies, I can tell he's not the sort of person who would do something like that. And even if he is, he's not going to kill me in front of Seth, right on the street. If nothing else, he's smarter than that. He's certainly not impulsive. Whatever he's done was planned over months, maybe years. So I unlock the car doors and get out, despite Seth's protests. Caleb is walking toward me, but there's nothing threatening about him. He doesn't have a weapon. This is going to be okay. I need to know what's going on. I need the truth.
Hey, asshole! Seth yells.
He's getting out of the car just behind me.
You need to stay away from Natalie.
Caleb is about 3 feet away from me now. He looks up at Seth, shakes his head, and looks back down at me. I notice how his brows are knitted together.
Natalie, he says in a shaky voice, we need to talk. Damn straight, I say.
You've been lying to me all along. You planted that hair and blood in my car, didn't you? Caleb looks taken aback. He didn't expect me to say that. He stands there for a moment, not sure how to respond.
Well?
I prompted him.
Fine.
His voice is gruff.
I did it. I put the hair and blood in your trunk, okay?
I stare at him. Stunned he admitted it. Even though I had suspected it, I can't believe he would really do it. And why? Seth jogs over, joining me next to Caleb.
You killed her, didn't you? You killed Dawn, you bastard.
Caleb's face turns bright red.
No. No, of course not. I would never do that. I would never hurt her.
He stops himself mid-sentence.
She what?
I press him. What is it? He shakes his head.
Nothing. I can't.
Caleb, tell me what's going on here. A vein throbs in my temple. I deserve an explanation. Caleb looks at me for what feels like an hour, but it's probably more like a few seconds. He lets out a long breath.
Dawn isn't dead. How do you know that?
Seth shoots back. Caleb holds up his hands.
It's a long story, but she's not dead, okay? I promise.
Then where is she? I ask. He rakes a shaking hand through his hair.
I don't know. That's why I'm here. I need your help.
No chance. Seth glares at Caleb through the darkness.
You put Natalie through the ringer. She was in jail because of you. Why did you do this to her? What the hell's the matter with you?
Caleb's Adam's apple bobs.
Listen, there's no time. Dawn, bullshit. You need to tell us right now why you did this. Otherwise, we're calling the police on you.
Caleb takes a step back.
No, please.
Seth opens his mouth to say something else, but I hold up my hand to silence him. This isn't about him. This is about me and Caleb. I need the truth.
Caleb, I say,
I'm just trying to understand why you did this. I need to know. I don't think I deserve to be treated this way. I watch as his chest rises and falls, considering my statement.
I've watched you these last few months, he says, organizing your little 5K, getting on all the podcasts and local news stations, talking about how you were raising money for your good friend Amelia. But she wasn't your friend, was she?
There's venom in his voice now. I have a sinking feeling in my chest.
Caleb. I'll tell you who she was, he spits at me. She was my sister, and she was Dawn's best friend, not that you ever even thought of her as a person.
My legs feel like jello. I'm scared if I don't grab onto something, I'm going to fall flat on my face.
Amelia was... My sister's dead because of you!
He's shouting loud enough for the neighbors to hear, but he's beyond caring.
And you just moved on, like she meant nothing to you, like she was nothing. Worse, you're using her to promote yourself. How could you? Are you really that heartless?
I dig my thumbnail into my palm. I'm trying to raise money for charity.
Yeah, whatever. You're just doing it because you like the attention. It helps promote the company. I get it. You used her back then, and you're using her now.
Caleb's eyes are burning with hatred. He hates me. He really and truly hates me. How could he have kissed me and joked around with me and taken me to dinner when he hated me this much? I was 17 years old, I manage. Yes, I was awful to Amelia, but I was a kid. I look over at Seth, who appears thoroughly confused. She was a girl I knew in high school. I was mean to her. I know I was.
Mean to her? Caleb bursts out. You drove her to slit her wrist. My baby sister is dead because of you.
I can't believe Caleb is Amelia's brother. I didn't even know she had a brother. They have different last names. Hers was Hodge. It's hard to forget what happened that year. Things just got out of control. I'm not going to deny any part of that. I don't know why we were so mean to Amelia, in retrospect. I guess because she was different, and because we could. When you're 17 and you're pretty and popular, it makes you feel good to pick on somebody weaker than you are. It makes you feel powerful.
What do you want me to say, Caleb? I say. What can I do? I want you to rot in prison for the rest of your life, he hisses at me, like my little sister is rotting in the ground.
His eyes bore into me, smoldering with an anger that he will never be able to let go of. He can never forgive me for this. He will never stop believing that I should be punished for the rest of my life. There's nothing I can say or do to make this right.
So why are you here, Caleb? I finally say. To tell me how much you hate me?
My question seems to take some of the fight out of him.
Look, he says, I hate you for what you did, but you need to know that this whole thing, Dawn planned the whole thing out. It was her idea. And she's taking it too far. Because, well, You know Dawn. That's how she is.
Clearly he knows Dawn very well, much better than I could have imagined.
Damn straight she's taken it too far, Seth chimes in. You sent an innocent person to jail.
Caleb shoots him a withering look.
Right, but she doesn't think the charges will stick if there isn't a dead body. Her dead body, not whoever they found in the woods. She kept talking about that. And now I don't know where she is. She used my phone to call for a lift back to the South Shore, and now I don't know where she went. She called me from a phone somewhere and left this crazy message. She was giving me all these instructions for how to take care of her turtle, and it sounded like she was going to...
I gawk at him. What are you saying? His face crumbles. I'm pretty sure she's planning to kill herself.
To make sure there's a dead body.
I clutch my chest. Oh my God. Caleb is crying now. He buries his face in his palms, his shoulders shaking. It's at that moment I realize something shocking. Caleb loves Dawn. He truly loves her. When he was with me, it was all an act. But he's not acting now. He's terrified of losing her. He pulls his hands away from his face, and his eyes are red and puffy. Natalie, he croaks, you've got to help me find her. I've been driving around for hours, and I don't know where she is. Please, you owe me this. You owe her.
How can we possibly find her? I say. It's impossible, Seth says. We've got to call the police. No.
Caleb's voice is unwavering, despite his puffy face.
You can't do that to her. Do you know how much trouble she'll be in? As much trouble as Natalie was in this week, Seth retorts.
Seth, stop. I raise my eyes to look at Caleb. Do you have any idea where she could be? Caleb looks down at his watch.
If I had to guess, I'd say she's been hiding out near one of the beaches. It's high tide tonight, he grimaces. She probably figures if she drowns herself, she won't be found for long enough that they won't be able to place the exact time of death.
It's the same thought I had while I was sitting in jail. Wait for high tide, throwing myself in the ocean.
We can find her, I say.
Too bad there are about 1 million beaches around here, depending on how far she went. What if she's all the way in Cape Cod?
We need to split up. How far do you think she could have gone from here? She took all the cash in my wallet, Caleb says. But there wasn't a lot, maybe $100, so she couldn't have gotten very far.
We're going to find her, I say with more authority than I feel. We'll stop her before she does anything stupid. I hope I'm right. I need to stop Dawn from killing herself. I need to make this right. Chapter 58. The three of us split up. I take Wollaston Beach, where I disposed of the pieces of the ceramic turtle the other night. It's the beach I know best. Seth grumbled about me wandering around the beach by myself at night, but I'll be fine. I bought some mace for my purse after getting freaked out on Monday night when I arrived at my unlocked house. Unfortunately, the beach is very large, stretching all the way down the coast, and it's very, very dark out. I don't know why it always seems so dark after daylight savings time. I put my high beams on whenever I dare, but I can't see anything. Dawn could be anywhere. For all I know, she's already drowned herself and we're too late. I pull over for a moment to think. I have to be strategic about this, or else it's like trying to find a grain of sand on this gigantic beach. Dawn isn't just going to jump into the water and drown. It doesn't make sense. Her natural instinct will be to kick and flap her arms to save herself. Moreover, her body would quickly be found, and if they knew she was alive for a week after her disappearance, it could eliminate me as a suspect. When I had contemplated jumping into the water, I knew there was another element I needed, something to weigh me down. I start driving again, but this time I'm looking for something different. I'm looking for places where they're doing construction. After another 10 minutes of slowly driving along the coast, I spot it, a construction site abandoned for the night, full of bricks and mortar and wooden planks and one other thing, cinder blocks. I park my car and get out. If Dawn raided this construction site for a cinder block, she couldn't have gotten far from here. Those things are heavy. If my instincts are right, she's probably somewhere around here. Of course, I'm just guessing. She might not even be at the beach. But I also think she would stay close to where I live, in keeping with her strategy of pinning this whole thing on me. It's dark when I get out of the car. There are streetlights, but they only illuminate the street. The beach is pitch black. I turn on the flashlight function on my phone. There's a pier right around here, and that would be the most logical place for Dawn to jump. That's what I would have done. The pier is to my left. I took my shoes off the other day, but I leave them on now. I need to be able to make a quick exit. I step into the sand, squinting into the distance, directing my phone at the pier. And then I see it. A figure hunched over at the very end of the pier. Chapter 59. Dawn. The average human lifespan is under 80 years, but a lot of turtles live longer than that. Sea turtles especially can live to be 150 years older. Some large turtles can live over 400 years, in theory. I can't imagine anyone wanting to live 400 years. I've lived 30 years, and it has been utterly exhausting. I'm done. I have experienced everything I need or want to experience. I have had true friendship, even though it didn't last as long as I would have liked. I have had an enjoyable career. I have been in love, until the man I loved betrayed me with another woman. Although, to be fair, I did ask him to do it. Mia once told me she thought she was going to live to be 87 years old. I don't know how she came up with that number, but she liked to be very specific about things. She told me she was going to move to the Pacific Coast and have 3 children and 8 grandchildren. She also had a list of places she wanted to visit before she died. It was a long list. "We'll go together, Dawn," she used to say. "We'll travel the world, just the two of us. Okay?" The idea of traveling the world was terrifying to me. All those new places and things. I don't do well with novel experiences. What if you go to a new country and they can't serve you food that's all one color? What if I went into a restaurant and ordered a dish without knowing what it was because I didn't speak the language, and then it turned out I was eating a turtle? Yet the idea of traveling with Mia was exciting. I wouldn't have been scared to be in a new place if she was with me. She would make sure we would have a good time and that I would feel safe. She always did. Now that she's gone, the world seems terrifying again. I don't want to leave Massachusetts. The idea of being pregnant and having a baby growing inside me is frightening to me. I don't like to travel either. If I can't experience these things with Mia, I don't want to experience them at all. I thought there was a chance I could do those things with Caleb someday, but unfortunately that didn't work out like I thought it would. I have experienced everything I care to experience. The best parts of my life are over, so there's no reason to keep going, and I'm going to make sure my death counts. I borrowed a small cinder block from a construction site nearby. I took the smallest one I could find, which should be more than heavy enough to hold me underwater. It weighs around 30 pounds. I bought some cord at a drugstore with the cash I took from Caleb's wallet. I've tied one end to my ankle and the other to the cinder block. I've been watching the tide come in for the last hour. When the water gets high enough, I'm going to jump with the cinder block. Nobody is in the water in the middle of November, so there's an excellent chance I won't be found for at least a few weeks. The disappearance of my corpse will be the final nail in Natalie's coffin. She will spend the rest of her life in prison. We did it, Mia. We're finally going to make her pay. I wonder if she would have done the same for me. Mia and I defended each other, but I always defended her more vehemently than she defended me. Like that time in 3rd grade when I pushed that boy Jared Callahan off the top of the monkey bars because he wouldn't quit teasing her. I remember sitting at the top of the monkey bars, staring at Jared on the ground, watching the pool of blood forming around his head as one of the teachers at the playground started screaming. Mia told me I went too far that time. She sounded a lot like Caleb does sometimes now. But the fact is, Jared never made fun of her again. Actually, he never made fun of anyone ever again. As the water levels rise, I wonder what Caleb is doing right now. I left him a message, mostly to make sure he knew how to take care of Junior. But he's smart. He may have figured out from the message what I was planning to do to myself.
He's probably panicked right now. But he'll come to realize that this was for the best. If not now, someday. The waves crash against the beach, over and over. It almost sounds like the water is calling my name. It's ready for me. Dawn. 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 It's time to jump. Dawn! Okay, that sounded a bit too much like my name. I whip my head around. For a second, I am blinded by a flash of light. I shield my eyes and I realize that it's a phone flashlight. Somebody is standing on the other end of the pier. Dawn! I scramble to my feet. I squint into the mist and I can barely make out a figure walking toward me. At first, their face is in the shadows. But it's not Caleb. Wrong build. It looks like a woman, and the voice is female. Dawn! She takes another step forward, and her facial features become clear. My stomach turns. It's Natalie. What is she doing here? She shuts off her flashlight on her phone. She sticks her hands up in the air like I've got a gun. If only. If I had a gun right now, she would be dead, and there would be no witnesses. I thought about that. I considered a simpler plan. Kill Natalie. Then I wouldn't have to fake my own death and go on the run. Except death is too easy for her. I wanted her to suffer the way I have suffered. The way Mia suffered before she decided to end it all. Please don't jump! Natalie's eyes flicker down to the cinder block at my feet. Please don't do this. Don't tell me what to do. I clench my teeth. How did you find me here? Caleb told me what was going on. If I wasn't angry before, I'm furious now. How could he? How could he go to her after all we went through to frame her? Why couldn't he just let this happen? He had no right. I'm glad he told me. The wind whips at Natalie's face, and she picks strands of blonde hair out of her eyes. I had no idea you knew Amelia. I hate the sound of my best friend's names on this woman's lips. Knew her. She was my best friend. My only friend. I know. I'm sorry. You killed her. You and your buddy Tara tormented her until she slit her wrist. Natalie flinches. I know. And I'm so sorry. All I can say is that I was only 17 years old. I didn't know better. No, I don't accept that. 17 is old enough to know better. She takes a step toward me and I take a step back. Although I need to be careful about that, I don't want to fall yet. Listen to me, she says. You hate me. But don't you think I feel terrible about what happened to Amelia? I do. Of course I do. Every single day since, I have blamed myself. Why do you think I started this charity run? I've been trying to make it up to her. Too late. We stare at each other for a moment. I'm wearing just a light jacket that belonged to Caleb, and I'm shivering in it. We didn't want to risk taking any of my own coats out of the house. The sleeves are far too long on me. I roll them up, but they're still almost down to my fingertips. Look, Natalie says. I know everything. Seth does too. If you jump, it won't do any good. You can't frame me for murder anymore. It's the first thing she said that's gotten through to me. She's right. If Caleb blabbed about our plan, she'll never go to prison for this. He has ruined everything. Everything we worked for. How could he do this to me? He couldn't possibly love me if he would betray me this way. Natalie knows who I am now. She's ready for me. I had a chance to get revenge, and Caleb blew it. I wanted to make Natalie pay for what she did to Mia. But it's not going to happen. There's only one way left to make her pay. I have to kill her. Caleb would never let me do it, but he's not here right now. He can't stop me. I have to end this. Right here. Right now.
Chapter 60. Natalie. I can't tell if I've gotten through to Dawn. She's difficult to read. She doesn't show anger on her face the way Caleb did. She still hates me, but I don't know what she'll do next. Will she still try to kill herself? Did anything I say resonate with her? She bends down and picks up the cinder block. I'm not sure why, but there's nothing good she could be doing with the cinder block. I step closer, scared she's going to toss the block into the water, and that it will pull her in. I don't think I can save her easily if she does that. But I'm ready to jump in if I have to. I'll try. But she doesn't do that. Instead, she heaves the cinder block into the air, holding it above her head. She lifts her eyes to meet mine, and all of a sudden I realize what she's doing. She's planning to beat me to death with the cinder block. Oh, God. It wouldn't be hard. That thing has got to weigh at least 30 pounds. A few good clocks on the head, and that would be the end of me. She would finally have her revenge.
Dawn, I gasp. What are you doing?
What I should have done years ago.
Her voice is flat, her eyes dull.
I'm going to make sure you can never hurt anyone ever again.
Dawn, please don't do this.
I clutch my purse to my chest and stumble backward. I told you. I'm so sorry for what I did to Amelia. But killing me won't change anything. It won't bring her back.
And you stole the man I love.
Stole him? I shake my head. I didn't steal Caleb.
It wasn't enough that you killed my best friend. You also had to have him, too.
She has really lost it. I'm not sure I can talk her down anymore. Dawn, Caleb was the one who asked me out. I thought he was single, for God's sake.
I loved him.
A few flecks of saliva hit me in the face.
He was the last good thing in my life. The only good thing. And you took him from me. And now he likes you better.
That's not true.
Yes, he does. Of course he does.
He doesn't. He hates me, just like you do.
Liar. He used to hate you, but not anymore. He's fallen under your spell like everyone else. Why else would he betray me this way?
Her eyes are wet. It hits me that as angry as she is about Amelia and what I did all those years ago, she's just as furious that I stole Caleb from her. Maybe even more so. I'll never forget the anguished look on Caleb's face when he thought Dawn might kill herself. It turns out she feels the same way about him. Apparently, Caleb is the one. Just not my one. But she refuses to believe he has no real feelings for me. She's lost her grip on reality, which was tenuous to begin with. She doesn't care anymore what's true. She only cares about getting revenge. Dawn is small and skinny, but her arms aren't even shaking as she holds up the cinder block. That thing will do damage no matter where it lands. I've got to do something to stop her. I fumble around inside my purse. My fingers close around the spray bottle of mace, and I yank it out. Dawn's eyes fill with confusion, and then a second later, I hit the nozzle. The chemical comes spraying out in a thick cloud, and then her eyes are filled with mace, whatever that is. She screams. She drops the cinder block onto the ground, thankfully missing all four of our feet. She clutches her eyes and doubles over.
You bitch, she hollers.
Damn, I got her good. She's writhing around on her knees, still clutching her face. I hope I didn't somehow blind her. I don't need to add that to the list of crimes I've committed against Dawn Schiff. When she finally stops screaming and looks up at me, her eyes are bloodshot and watery. On the plus side, she doesn't seem to be blind.
Fine, she says. You win. He's yours.
I crouch down beside her on the pier. I'm going to get splinters, but I try not to think about that. Dawn, I don't want Caleb, and he doesn't want me. Trust me on that. She buries her face in her palms, just shaking her head. He loves you, I tell her. You and only you. I was throwing myself at him, and he always kept me at a distance. Now I understand why. And you know what he did tonight? She shakes her head again. He cried. I think back to the tears in Caleb's eyes. No man has ever felt like that about me before. Sometimes I wonder if it will ever happen. And yet Caleb feels that way about Weird Dawn. He couldn't bear it, that something might have happened to you.
He would have gotten over it.
I don't believe he would. It would have destroyed him. Dawn considers this for a moment as she sits on the pier, wiping away the chemicals I sprayed into her eyes. What I said before is true, you know. I look out at the ocean, watching the waves crash against the shore. There hasn't been a day that goes by when I don't think about Amelia and hate myself for what I did. Yes, I made up the part about us being friends, but I was always running in her honor. It was all for her. My penance.
That doesn't erase what you did.
I know. I wanted you to know it, though. Dawn's eyes go down to her ankle. The cord is still secured to her right leg. She starts working on the knot, attempting to untie it.
Caleb really cried?
She asks as the knot pops open. I nod.
He didn't even cry over Mia,
she murmurs. She doesn't say anything else. Neither do I. We just sit together, watching the tide come in, both of us glad it's not pulling us into its clutches, as we realize how close each of us came to suffering that fate tonight. Chapter 61. My phone is buzzing in my purse. It's a text message. I pull it out and realize that I've missed several messages, 2 from Seth and 5 from Caleb, all asking where we are. I text them both that I found Dawn, but not our exact location. I'm not even entirely sure how to describe where we are. Hey, I say to Dawn, Caleb and Seth are looking for us. We should head back. She frowns.
What happens next?
That's a great question. The first thing I would like to do is march Dawn right back to the police station so Santoro can see she is still alive, that I'm not a cold-blooded murderer who bullied my coworker and killed her when she discovered I was stealing money. I want to hear him tell me that all the charges have been dropped. Unless he plans to pin the murder of that stranger on me. Frankly, I wouldn't put anything past him. Caleb just wants to see that you're okay, I tell her. And then we'll figure out what to do from there. Dawn considers this for a moment. Then she struggles to her feet, wobbling a little bit before she finds her balance. Part of me is scared she might throw herself into the ocean at the last second. But she doesn't.
He's going to be mad at me,
she murmurs. He won't be mad. He's just going to be relieved you're okay. I turn on the flashlight on my phone so we don't accidentally walk off the pier before we get back to dry land. I also shoot off a quick text message to both Caleb and Seth. We are on the pier right near the Angry Crab restaurant. Just as we get back to the main road, a pair of twin headlights approaches us. Both Seth and Caleb are here. Caleb pulls over first in his green Ford and leaps out of the driver's seat while the car is almost still moving. His hair is disheveled and his coat is hanging open as he runs down the street to where we're standing. Before we could even acknowledge his presence, he throws his arms around Dawn, holding her close to his chest.
Jesus Christ! His voice cracks. I was so worried about you. How could you think of doing something like that? How could you, Dawn? I'd never...
Dawn doesn't say anything, but she hugs him back. Her skinny little fingers cling to him so tightly. I can see how white they are, even on the dimly lit street. They just stand there like that, holding each other. It makes me tear up a bit, if I'm being honest.
Nat!
Seth has parked behind Caleb, and he's getting out of his own car now, at a lot more leisurely pace, but he still sprints the rest of the way over to me. I'm not going to kid myself that Seth loves me the way Caleb loves Dawn, but he's gone out on a limb for me today. He bailed me out of jail. He drove me out to Rhode Island. He was going to foot the bill for a lawyer if it came to that. I may have underestimated Seth Hoffman.
You okay?
He asks when he gets within comfortable earshot. I nod, although when I wrap my arms around my chest, I realize I'm not as fine as I thought. I was in jail this morning. Dawn tried to clock me on the head with a cinder block about 20 minutes ago. I'm far from okay, but I will be.
Are you cold?
Seth tugs at a zipper of his coat like he's going to take it off and give it to me.
You look like you're freezing.
I'm a little cold, I admit. It's got to be 30 degrees out here, maybe less when you factor in the breeze from the ocean. Seth doesn't take off his coat, but he unwraps the scarf that was around his neck. He gently places it around my own neck. It's a black fleece scarf that has a hint of Seth's aftershave. It radiates his warmth. Thanks, I say.
You're welcome.
His eyes linger on mine, and I wonder if it would be inappropriate to ask if he would come home with me tonight. It's not just that I don't want to be alone. I want to be with him.
Oh, hey, he says. Guess what? I was listening to the radio on the way over, and apparently they identified the dead body of that woman in Cohasset.
I nod. That's good for her family.
Yeah, and I bet Santora's going to get a lot of shit for arresting you for the murder of somebody who turned out to be still alive. They should have waited for the DNA to come back. They really jumped the gun.
Yes, Santora should have waited, but he was just too eager to nail me, all because he got bullied as a kid. Caleb and Dawn have finally disentangled themselves. He's got his arm around her shoulders, keeping her warm with his body heat.
So, who was the woman in Cohasset? I asked Seth.
He lifts a shoulder.
Some woman, Kara something?
He cocks his head thoughtfully.
No. Tara, I think. Nobody we know, anyway.
Tara? No. It couldn't be. My hands are shaking slightly as I reach into my purse and pull out my phone. I bring up a search engine and look up news stories about the identity of the body found in Cohasset. It's breaking news, and the name comes up instantly.
Tara Wilkes, I choke out.
Tara Wilkes, my old best friend from high school, the one who sat with me writing fake Valentines to Amelia Hodge all those years ago. Seth snaps his fingers.
Right, Tara Wilkes, that was it.
My eyes dart over to Caleb's face. He heard me say the name Tara Wilkes just now, but he didn't react. There's not even a flicker of recognition. The name means nothing to him. But when my eyes reach Dawn's, I see something completely different. The girl found in the woods was not a coincidence. All those years, Dawn hated me for being the mastermind, but she hated Tara, too, for the part she played in Amelia's suicide. Death was too good for me, but it wasn't too good for Tara. Oh, God.
That poor woman, Seth is saying. They were saying on the radio that the reason they thought it was Dawn was that her hair was all hacked off, and her face was so badly beaten she was unrecognizable. Oh, geez, Caleb says, squeezing Dawn tighter in his arms. That's awful.
Dawn's eyes stay on mine.
Yes, she says. Awful.
A chill goes down my spine that has nothing to do with the sub-freezing temperature. Dawn wanted more than anything to get revenge on the people she felt were responsible for Amelia's death. She was willing to do anything. She was willing to take her own life. She was willing to kill. She's a very dangerous woman, and nobody knows but me. Epilogue. 1 year later. Dawn.
Turtles have a reputation for being slow, although it's not entirely fair. Most walk at a speed of about 2 miles per hour, approximately half of the normal human walking speed of 3 to 4 miles per hour. But they can swim at a speed of 10 miles per hour, and the fastest turtle in the world can reach speeds of over 20 miles per hour. That means the fastest turtle in the world could finish a 5K in about 10 minutes. It took me half an hour. I spent the last 2 months training. Caleb and I did it together. We ran around the neighborhood together side by side, working on my endurance and speed. The first day I could barely run a mile. By the last quarter of a mile, I was huffing and puffing, my lungs on fire. But today I burst through the finish line of the 5K, sweaty and achy but filled with adrenaline. Caleb is right by my side. Even though his legs are much longer than mine, and he could have been done with this 5K 10 minutes ago, we ran the whole thing together. He cheered me on. Mia would have been so proud of us. Great job, Dawn! Caleb holds up his hand so I can high-five him. You okay? I nod, still trying to catch my breath. That was awesome. Wasn't it? He grins at me. I told you. My heart swells as I look up at Caleb, even though he is just as sweaty and disheveled as I feel. When Caleb held me in his arms that night at the pier, when I nearly killed myself, I realized at that moment how stupid I was to be jealous of Natalie. He loves me. He will always love me. I still had my reservations about saddling him with me for the rest of his life.
even though he has assured me that that is what he wants. We've been taking some baby steps to move our relationship forward. We moved in together a couple of months ago. I had to spend several days rearranging all his furniture to my liking, as well as the contents of all the cabinets in his kitchen. He had 3 different colors of plates, all stacked haphazardly. It was awful. But after some growing pains, it seems to be going well. Still, I've been hesitant to talk about the next step after that. Marriage. That's a big one. Although more and more, I'm beginning to actually believe it might work out. Natalie waves to me from the registration desk. She looks beautiful as always today, in her 5K t-shirt and skin-tight running pants. I still remember the way the color drained out of her face when she found out the dead body in the woods belonged to Tara Wilkes, when she realized what I had done. I wasn't certain if she would keep her mouth shut. I was ready to do whatever it took to silence her. But as it turned out, she is good at keeping secrets, which is fortunate for her, because I know a lot of secrets about her, too. For starters, Natalie went along with the story that I told to Detective Santoro, that the ceramic turtle accidentally fell on my head, and I spent several days disoriented and wandered away from home, that I hadn't the slightest idea that half the South Shore was looking for me. And she never told the police about our link to Tara. Nobody looked into it, and I was very good at covering my tracks. Her murder is still unsolved. I was fortunate that she had grown up to be a miserable human being who had isolated herself from most of her family, had few close friends, so nobody was pushing too hard for answers. Then a few months ago, Natalie asked if I would be interested in helping her organize the 5K this year. Both Caleb and I quit Vixed a long time ago. It would have been far too awkward to keep working there. But the idea of helping to raise money for a charity that Mia would have really cared about was appealing to me. With Natalie's blessing, we made the race even more about Mia this year. I went on podcasts and talked about her. It was cathartic. I talked about some of the struggles she went through with her mobility and how important this money would be. Natalie said donations broke all records this year. Right next to the registration desk, there is a huge poster of Mia made from an old photo Caleb dug up. I miss her so much, and just looking at that poster makes me feel happier. Mia would be so proud of you too, Caleb says, as if reading my mind. I don't know how he does that. For sure. Mia would be proud of me. She'd be proud that I avenged her death by killing Tara Wilkes. I let her down with Natalie, though, but I didn't have a choice. Caleb didn't know about Tara, but he would never have let me kill Natalie. He was so maddeningly against violence. It got to the point where I was sorry I told him anything in the first place. Caleb believes I'm a better person than I am. He can never know the truth. I lay my head on his shoulder. What do you think she would think about the two of us being together?
Her brother and her best friend? Are you kidding me? She'd be over the moon.
He's probably right. It's exactly something Mia would have gotten a huge kick out of. I wonder what kind of man she would have ended up with. She was so great. It would have had to be someone really special.
Wherever she is right now, Caleb says, she's rooting for us to end up together.
Do you think we will? Caleb gives me a funny look. I've gotten better at reading his facial expressions, but I can't read this one. I don't know what he's thinking. Does he think we won't end up together? Because I've been thinking more and more that I can't imagine any sort of life without him. And even though he would be better off without me, I selfishly still want him. What? I say. Caleb doesn't answer me. Instead, he drops down onto one knee. I stare at him and clasp a hand over my mouth. Dawn. He fishes around in the pocket of his running shorts and comes up with a blue velvet box. He must have been holding onto that for a whole year, waiting for the right moment. Dawn. I love you so much. I can't even speak.
I don't cry easily, but I feel tears gathering in my eyes. A crowd is forming around us, now that people realize what's happening. He opens up the blue velvet box. I let out a gasp at the ring inside. Instead of a diamond, he got me an emerald. It's green, like a turtle. Dawn, will you marry me? Yes, yes. Both of our hands are trembling as he slides the green rock onto my left fourth digit. Maybe it's the endorphins from running, but I don't think I've ever felt this happy. I was dead wrong a year ago when I thought I had experienced everything there was. I have so much left. I'm so grateful to Natalie for stopping me before I made the worst mistake of my life. I'm glad I decided not to kill her after all. Natalie. Caleb and Dawn are so cute you could almost puke. The crowd is going wild about Caleb's surprise proposal. The two of them are going to be really happy together. They're both wicked crazy. It'll be a good fit. God help any children they make together. Of course, Caleb doesn't know quite how crazy Dawn really is. But if he finds out, it's not going to be from me. Seth comes to join me at the registration table, which is empty now that the race is finished. He throws one of his arms around my shoulders and grins at me. He's been a lot more open about public displays of affection since his divorce went through last month. Melinda put him through the ringer, but she's out of his life for good. And now, it's just us.
You did an amazing job, Nat, he says.
Thanks. This was our best year yet. Dawn catches my eye from her spot in the crowd, where everyone is offering her congratulations. She looks a little overwhelmed like she always gets in large crowds, but she's dealing with it. I give her a little happy wave, and she waves back. Dawn was a huge part of organizing the 5K this year. I wasn't sure she would agree to it, but she loved the idea of honoring her best friend, who took her own life all those years ago. Now it's 14 years later, and Amelia is still making a difference in our lives. We have raised a ton of money over the years from the 5K, breaking records this year. Even Detective Santoro made a sizable donation, a peace offering, I suppose. And of course, I have skimmed my usual share off the top. I'm careful, though. I never take more than a small amount, enough to help me pay for my lifestyle, but not so much that anyone will notice. Amelia owes me after all the trouble she got me into after her suicide. So many people blamed me for that I had to resign as class president. One teacher even threatened to fail me. It wasn't my fault she took her own life. She was weak. My God, it was just a stupid joke. Last year, I had to siphon off a little more than usual from the donations. I had to transfer the money back to the VIXT account before Seth figured out I'd stolen money from the company. If he had done a more thorough audit, I would not have been able to hide my tracks. But of course, I knew he wouldn't. If he were more careful, I would never have gotten away with it in the first place. I don't feel guilty about it. VIXT is a huge company that's earning record-breaking profits. Our products are selling like crazy. Well, except for Kala Health, which had to be recalled a few months ago due to unexpected side effects. Seth squeezes my shoulders, looking out at Dawn and Caleb, who are now holding hands.
Is this giving you any ideas?
I don't know, I say. Is it giving you any ideas?
Maybe.
He winks at me.
I'm a free man now, you know.
Things have gotten fairly serious between Seth and me over the last year. He'd been devastated after I broke things off with him and was desperate to get me back. It's flattering. Of course, the first time we were together, he was reluctant to break it off with his wife. He was meticulously careful to make sure we didn't get caught. So I helped move things along. I sent Melinda a little note about her husband's extracurricular activities. She was devastated, but she didn't leave him like I hoped she would. So I faked a few threatening phone calls from her, some scarily worded notes. I got Seth to believe his wife was crazy. And then to my surprise, she really did go a little crazy. Started threatening me for real. I had to back off, at least temporarily. But she's out of our lives now. I even managed to get a restraining order against her. Not that little Melinda Hoffman is any real danger to me. She can't hurt me. I'd like to see her try. And thanks to the generous donations to the 5K this year,
I will have a little nest egg set aside to pay for my wedding dress. When we get married, I can give Seth the child he always wanted. It's a happy ending for everyone. Well, aside from Melinda. I stand with Seth, watching Caleb kiss Dawn yet again. They really do make a nice couple. And I'm glad Dawn came to her senses that night and didn't jump in the water. It's amazing how close that little mouse came to taking me down. She's craftier than I gave her credit for. She and I have an unspoken agreement now. I keep my mouth shut about Tara, and she keeps her mouth shut about all the money she knows I embezzled from Vixt. After all, Seth might be careless, but she isn't. I knew the second I got that email from her asking to speak with me after work that she knew what I had done. A matter of great importance. That was why I was so desperate to speak with her. So desperate that I went to her house looking for her the next afternoon, which is where I had discovered Dawn had vanished and there was all that blood on the carpet. She wanted me to get caught for embezzlement. She wanted that to be my motive for killing her. But now I know one of her secrets, too. We will keep each other's secrets to the grave. Dawn may be dangerous, but so am I. This has been The Coworker, written by Freda McFadden, narrated by Allison Krawchuk. Copyright 2023, Freda McFadden.